Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And now to look ahead to some of the best TV and cinema releases for the month ahead. I am joined in studio by producer and director Brian Redden and freelance arts journalist Aoife Barry. Good morning, everybody. How are we?
Morning. Very well.
We are kicking off this morning with a new series, entirely new to me. I haven't watched one and two. Only Murders in the Building.
My show is hanging on by a thread here.
Finding this killer is the only way you'll have a show.
Make a podcast with me?
Oh my god, this is corny.
So corny.
I know it is. Yeah. Murder?
Yeah, murder. Yeah.
So Oliver and Charles, what do you talk about?
Murder mostly. And how to connect to Bluetooth. We talk about that a lot.
Theater is all about choices. What you share and what you hide.
It's a clue.
Ooh. Those choices change everything.
You had the consideration to keep the body.
So, Steve Martin and Martin Short, yeah, we've seen them that before. The X Factor is throwing Selena Gomez in here,
yeah.
I imagine, Aoife, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. They play three neighbours in an Upper West Side apartment building in New York City, which means basically, you know, in layperson speak, they have a lot of money, or two of them have a lot of money. Steve Martin and Martin Short's characters are old friends. They befriend Selena Gomez's character, Mabel, after somebody is murdered in their apartment building. This is back in season one, and they decide to set up a podcast about it because all of them are obsessed with true crime podcasts. I'm presuming that the series was initially written kind of in the wake of Serial, the really famous podcast, because they kind of take the mick out of Serial and the podcasting world. We've had two series of it so far. The last two series, somebody has died in the apartment building. Seems to be a very active area for people being murdered. But when you get to the third series, what happens here is you get the death involves the lead person in Martin Short's play, which is a musical on Broadway. So you've got that personal connection to the person who's died, and the three of them of course decide to investigate how did this person, who is played by Paul Rudd, because this series is now attracting very big stars including Meryl Streep, how did Paul Rudd's character die? Series 2, I loved Series 1, I liked Series 2 a little less, but the two episodes that have been released of Season 3 are really good. It's back on top form. It's a really cosy watch, like even though it's about murders, you feel like you're watching your friends just do a kind of a nice little investigation into something terrible that's happened. And they have a really good chemistry. They really play up the age gap between them in a really funny, funny way.
Brian Redden, the only middle-aged Irish male without a true crime podcast ever. What did you think of this?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, Steve, as you say, Steve Martin and Martin Short, their comedy partnership goes right back to Three Amigos. So they've been around quite a while. They've made a lot of movies together. They've appeared on stage together. I've seen them on stage live twice. But it's a very comfortable type of comedy they do. You know, it's very... dare I say it, middle-aged, you know, there's very little edge to it.
Hasn't made me laugh in a very long time.
No, you know, it really has. He has gotten a bit comfortable, Steve Martin. He hasn't been the wild and crazy guy for a very long time. But as you say, having Gomez in the mix, what it does is it allows her to play on their age, really, and the age gap. And so she explains Bluetooth to them an awful lot. And so they play on gags like that. And it's actually a lot funnier than that sounds, to be honest with you, because Meryl Streep turns up in this, you know, and Meryl Streep plays this actor who's never quite made it, who's trying to hit the big time. Paul Rudd is horrible in this. Mm. He's a Hollywood star who comes in to take the lead in this stage show. And he's an absolute awful human being. He's really funny in it. So I think the guest stars they get in, I still find Steve Martin isn't, well, he's not as funny as he used to be. And in this, he's a little lame. Martin Short to me is the star of this. He overplays it. He's a very overly theatrical theatre director on Broadway. He really plays on that. But he can hit the pathos, those moments, pretty well too. He's a very fine actor and a brilliant comedian. So to me, he's the star of this. But it's definitely... it's dropping. It's like old TV. You got to wait every week for an episode. So the first two episodes dropped, and now you got to hang on for the third one. So it's like old style television watching.
Old,
you know?
TV. Yeah. Listen to you, down with kids. All right. Next, we have Painkiller streaming on Netflix.
If it's working, which it is,
we can increase the dose.
Let's kick you up to 40 milligrams.
It doesn't just kill people. Destroys the families and friends.
You're a drug dealer with a ponytail.
You bought that car with the death of a 16-year-old girl.
They are doing the exact same thing as every crack dealer in America. Except
they are getting rewarded for it.
He is in pain. He is addicted to pills. And it's your fault.
They know they are killing people.
Richard Sackler.
Hello?
You were...
You did a good job making all that money, sir.
Thank you.
If you don't get out of my way, I'll run you over with my car and crush your skull.
Then you'll give me Oxycontin to make it right.
Aoife, if you've seen Dope Sick, does Painkiller do anything different?
Well, out of the two of us here, Brian's seen Dope Sick and I haven't. And when I was watching this, I thought, oh, I should have watched Dope Sick because I wanted to compare the two because...
It's really good.
Yeah, I kept hearing such good things, but I just haven't got around to watching
okay.
it. And the tone
Aoife,
of this is
Aoife
different,
Barry,
I think. Yeah.
Stop.
Okay.
Brian right, Redden. So. Brian Redden, if you've seen Dope Sick, does this do it any better?
No. In a word, it doesn't. I'm a bit knackered now because I was up till 3:30 this morning watching this. I did. I put it on as 6 or 7 episodes, put it on about 8:30. But you know the way Netflix suck you in? With, they just go on to the next episode. Before you know it, you're watching the next episode. So I kept saying, I'll watch one more here. So I watched the whole thing last night. So I've seen it all. If you've seen Dope Sick, you've seen this. And you've seen it done better. Now, having said that, it is quite good. You know, the story is about Purdue Pharma and the opioid crisis that took over America.
And one of the most incredibly cynical decisions ever taken by any corporation anywhere in the history of capitalism.
Yeah, and none of them went to prison over it. I mean, they're all still free men, which is bizarre, really. So they're pushing this OxyContin, this drug painkiller, knowing that it's highly addictive and eventually led to lots of deaths. And actually, where this kind of has the edge over Dope Sick, so this basically looks at that whole scandal. Each episode starts with the testimony of a real person. And they start off by saying, you know, what you're about to see is a fictionalized account of real events. But what happened to me is very real. And it's the parent of a child who died from OxyContin. So they set their stall out very early on. And you know kind of where the heart of this series is coming from.
But Aoife, casting Matthew Broderick, are we meant to be disarmed by the cute and cuddly Broderick here, or are they sweetening the pill?
I don't think they're trying to sweeten the pill, but I think they're trying to play up the fact that Richard Sackler was very eccentric. Someone who...
This is the key executive in Purdue Pharma.
Exactly. Who's like haunted by his uncle who died, who is someone who did terrible things in terms of business-wise. It was a very strange, eccentric person. And like the first few scenes with Matthew Broderick, he's getting out of bed in the middle of the night and kind of roaming around his house and he looks really odd. The prosthetics and the fake hair and everything look really bad on him as well. I don't think the makeup is great.
No.
And his character is, you know, whenever Matthew Broderick is on screen, no matter how awful his character is supposed to be, he can't escape the fact, you know, that he is this kind of almost
Ferris
cuddly.
Bueller.
He is Ferris Bueller. He's a kind of, you know, young-ish kind of weird kind of cosy character in a strange way. And it was him that has jarred with me watching this. That sometimes I find that in series, particularly Netflix style series like this, if you have a character who's supposed to be the bad or evil person, you don't actually need to ham up how bad they are, because what he has done is a very, very, very bad thing. And I think there is a little bit of an edge with his character that it kind of edges into caricature for me anyway. But I do think that if you look at the other characters in it, like say Taylor Kitsch plays a guy who's injured in an incident at work and gets a back injury and then is prescribed OxyContin, which is highly, highly addictive and can lead to serious issues and death with people. You follow his character and he plays that like a real man. You believe the story that he and his family are going through. So I think if you can overlook the bits that maybe you don't enjoy, if you're not a fan of Broderick's character, the real elements of it really hit home. And having those real people, like Brian was saying at the start, kept it together for me. If they weren't there, I don't think it would have worked quite
as
well.
But I agree with you. I think Broderick is the weak link in it. It's not good casting. It's silly casting. He really shouldn't be playing that part because you don't know how to take him, really.
It follows in a theme, doesn't it, the Painkiller following Dope Sick, of TV producers and film producers wanting to give the audience stuff for that content that they are familiar with. Something that has been sucking the life and budgets out of the film industry, people have been saying, with all of these mid-budget adult dramas and cinema and so on being franchises, things that we already know, things that we're already familiar with. Barbie would be a particularly good example. Mm-hmm. You, though, Aoife, have picked out a film, You've Hurt My Feelings.
Yeah, this is the kind of antidote to what you're talking about there, definitely. It's not based on IP, although I suppose it does involve the idea of intellectual property because it's about an author who's written a book. It's directed by Nicole Holofcener. People will know her work like Walking and Talking, Friends with Money. She tends to focus on like middle class New Yorkers, you know, people who are pretty relatable, even though they probably have a bit more money than the rest Best of Us. She was also the co-writer on The Last Duel. And in this, she works with Julia Louis-Dreyfus again. She worked with her on Enough Said, where she plays a woman who falls in love with James Gandolfini, the late, great James Gandolfini. And in this, she plays a woman who's an author. She is a teacher as well. She's really been trying to get her career going for decades. And she's written a book that her agent has rejected, which is a nightmare, of course, if you're trying to keep your career as a writer going. So she's feeling really bad about the fact her book's rejected. And to make things worse, she overhears her usually very supportive husband, who's played by Tobias Menzies, say to somebody that he's also not a big fan of her book either. So you can only imagine the sort of crisis that she plunges into. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus, so I'm still haven't seen this film. It's supposed to be dropping on Prime Video. I'm waiting for it to appear on mine. She's been in Veep and, I mean, Seinfeld. She's an icon as Elaine in Seinfeld.
She can do no
like,
wrong.
She's just brilliant. So herself and Nicole Hall of Center are just two really great women. And you know, with this film, you're just going to really enjoy it. It might not be 5 stars. It'll certainly be at least 4.
Now, let me tee up a bit of good news, hopefully, with this.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mugging around. Oh, I want to be like you.
Frankly, for me, I could leave pretty much every Disney film except that one. That just hits all the buttons for me. And you have, Brian Redden, good news for Disney fans.
Yeah, so it's 100 years since Disney was created, believe it or not. 100 years. This is a centenary year. So back in October 1923, Walt Disney and his brother Roy created the Disney Brothers Studios, which then became the Disney Studios. 1923, although I think their first cartoon wasn't until 1928 when they brought out Steamboat Willie with mm-hmm. Mickey Mouse. But then 1923. So to celebrate 100 years of Disney are doing lots of things. But one thing they're doing, which I think is great, is they're re-releasing a lot of the classics. The Jungle Book, you just heard Louis Prima there as King Louis, is he? Is that King Louis?
King
he is King
Swingers.
Louis. Yeah, King of the Swingers. That's one of them. So what they're doing is they're re-releasing all those original movies. A lot of those movies I've never seen on the big screen. I've seen them on TV, and they're all streaming on Disney Plus as well. So you can sit at home, watch them, but I haven't seen them on the big screen. So from next weekend until going through September and into October, every weekend they're going to release one of the classics back into the cinemas. So you have Jungle Book, you have Bambi, Cinderella, Peter Pan, 101 Dalmatians, and Beauty and the Beast. They're the first ones they're going
to
run out.
A chance to do untold psychological damage to the children of 2023, just like was done to us.
You want to bring your kid to a film that's full of murder and revenge and death and evil, go to a Disney film.
And if you want the antidote to that, just go and see The Jungle Book. I love it, I love it, I love it. Yeah. Now, Face Down, an Irish documentary that lands in cinemas on the 11th of August. It's about the kidnapping of Germany's honorary consul to Northern Ireland in 1973.
Yeah, so interesting. And it's going to be in cinemas, like you're saying, from the 11th, the disappearance of Thomas Niedermayer, who in 1973 was kidnapped just after Christmas, the 27th of December. Himself and his daughters answered the door to two men who said that they had accidentally crashed into his car and could he come out and have a look, and actually they kidnapped him from the family home. And the family, his wife and two daughters, were obviously devastated, did not know what had happened to him, who had taken him, what was going on. They'd moved over from Germany for him to take a job working in, I think it was West Belfast, in the factory there. And it wasn't until 7 years later when an IRA defector told RUC that he had details on where Thomas Niedermayer's body was buried, and he was indeed found face down in an illegal dump, which is why the name of the documentary is Face Down. And this is actually told by his granddaughters, because there was huge like intergenerational trauma as a result of this happening. Very sad story in terms of the impact on all of his family. And the granddaughter is basically going on a journey to find out what happened to their grandfather. And I suppose really just talking about the impact of this incident and how it just has this ripple effect from his wife, daughters, and even their partners later on. So it's directed by Jerry Gregg, and the writer-producer is David Blake Knox as well.
Indeed. Okay. Brian Redden, you're probably going to be sleeping tonight to catch up on what you missed on last night. But from tonight on Netflix, people can see Heart of Stone. Why are you recommending this?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because, it's an interesting time for action movies at the moment. I mean, you look at the two big action films of this summer, they didn't perform very well. I mean, Mission Impossible has just made $500 million worldwide and it still hasn't made a profit on $500 million.
It's great fun, though.
It's great fun, but it's not making any. People aren't going the way they used to go and see these action films. Indiana Jones, for example, $300 million was the budget for that, hasn't made its money back. So the era of the big blockbuster action film in cinema, who knows, it may be coming to an end, but the streamers have taken over. And Netflix particularly does action really, really well on half the budget of those big movies. And they're really interesting. Now, this one, it's getting actually really, really good reviews. The plot of it, I mean, I'll tell you the plot of it, but you'll forget it in 30 seconds. The plot of it is exactly the same as Mission Impossible. It's a group of special agents. It's a piece of AI called The Heart. And basically, these special agents use this piece of AI to help them to get out of tricky situations. So, for example, you're
I've
tied up in a dungeon.
I've already forgotten where you started.
Doesn't really matter. The plot with
you're
this,
tied
right?
up in a dungeon somewhere. The bad guys are going to get you. You get onto the heart. It tells you how to get out. Nonsense. Anyway, someone's taken over this heart, and then the special agent, Mrs. Stone,
but
played by
Enough. It's fun on a budget, is what you're saying, but a budget that doesn't look cheap.
Exactly. It's Gal Gadot. I think I pronounced her name right.
You did.
Gal Gadot. She's the lead in it. Jamie Dornan's in it as well. So agents chasing after a bad guy. Lots of action. Lots of explosions, lots of fun.
And a texter wants to know on 51551, when discussing new TV shows, movies, music, etc., what's wrong with the word released instead of dropped? Why this incessant need to make up new words for things or events or actions that have been happening for the last 100 years, asks Cormac. You're not guilty of using dropped either, are you?
That's a good point. Yes. Did I say dropped?
No, I don't
dropped.
Think you did. Did you?
If I did, well, I meant to say released.
You apologise now.
I apologise unreservedly. You can now either release or drop me, whichever way you want.
We'll think about that over a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.